This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 18th of November, 2021. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle, from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Our editors this week were Liz and Gordon Glegg. And our readers today are Ros Lydiard.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Claire Porter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. So we begin with our usual regular notices. I suspect you know them better than me by now. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please first check that the box is plugged into the mains before you contact Liz Legree via the telephone number on the USB fob. As you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you'd like to listen to them again. And one more note for those of you who have computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order. The most recent will be first on the list. Right, so let's take a look at this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle, and the headlines are: traders told to leave King's Walk, busy councillor faces removal from NHS board, hospice opens doors after major refunding, and jab deadline for care home staff. So, Ros, could we have the first headline story, please?
Yes. Traders told to leave King's Walk. Two Winchester shops are facing eviction as the City Council looks to create an arts and creative hub. Winchester City Council has given Sunflowers Emporium and Suki Market until February next year to leave their current location at King's Walk, leaving both frustrated and confused by the decision. It forms part of the frequently reported City Council's long-term plan for the area to revamp the current setup to bring more people to that part of the city. Sunflowers Emporium manager Alistair Days said, "We've been trying to get the council to pay attention to this area for a long time by tidying it up and getting people down there. It seems like they were deliberately neglecting it in the hope that it would just run itself into the ground and then they could do whatever they want." The shop's owner, Barbara Cooper, said, "My lease was due to expire on December the 24th, so I emailed the council asking for my lease to be extended. I received nothing until we were told about the eviction." Mr. Day explained how frustrated they were with the council's viewpoint on the type of shop they want to keep for the area. He said, "The Chinese shop and us have been asked to leave, but none of the others have been, even though none of those businesses fitted in with the arts theme. We've just been told that the record shop is apparently a creative business. We have a regular and loyal customer base because we sell a lot of products that people can't get anywhere else in the city. The council are just ending a 16-year business because of the vague notion of an arts and creative hub. We can't afford to move to the high street. Suki Market, which specialises in Chinese food, has been given the same deadline. Owner Siu Hai was equally frustrated by the council's decision. He said, 'We want to stay. A lot of our customers come here to our shop and it's good for the local people. My shop has been open for 10 years. The council has been approached for comment.'"
Thank you, Ros. Richard, please.
Busy councillor faces removal from NHS board. A senior councillor could find himself removed from his position on the board of an NHS trust. At Hampshire County Council's Health and Adult Social Care Select Committee meeting last month, councillors met to discuss the Stage 2 independent report into Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust. But during the discussion, the topic of Deputy Council Leader Councillor Rob Humby and his position on the Trust's Council of Governors also came under scrutiny. Liberal Democrat spokesperson for Health and Adult Social Care, Councillor David Harrison, said, "We have an appointed member who sits on the board of Southern Health, and I don't think we've heard anything from him. Why are we appointing such a busy man to a role like this? We need people who are on top of the case." Councillor Humby was not present at the meeting, but the chairman, Councillor Bill Withard, said he would take action. "You'll be well aware that that's not in my remit," he said. "But what I will do is request a chat with the council leader and see if we can get another councillor reappointed to that post." Councillor Humby's position is one of five appointed posts to Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust's Board of Governors. The other four positions are appointed by the University of Southampton, Southampton City Council, Carers Together and Age Concern Hampshire. The Council of Governors is designed to hold the Trust to account and represents the interests of the public, while also determining pay and working conditions for Trust directors. Hampshire County Council has refused to say whether Councillor Humby will be leaving the position or whether Councillor Withers has spoken to the Council leader yet. A Council spokesperson said, "County Council makes a wide range of appointments to outside bodies, including NHS provider organisations such as Southern Health Foundation Trust, as the work of these organisations has a bearing on the delivery of local authority duties and services. These outside appointments are made by the County Council executive members. In this case, the appointment of Councillor Humby was made by the executive lead member for Adult Services and Public Health, Councillor Liz Fairhurst. It is not the remit of the individuals appointed to report directly to select committees."
Thank you, Richard. And Claire, please.
Hospice opens doors after major fundraising effort. Winchester Hospice has opened after a major fundraising effort by local people and is now caring for patients. Until now, people living in the city and surrounding areas have had to travel to Basingstoke, Andover and Southampton for hospice care. But thanks to a fundraising mission, £4.4 million has been raised to transform Burrell House, a former nurse's home on the Royal Hampshire County Hospital site, into a hospice. The Romsey Road build was approved in February 2019, with the ambition to create a much-needed 10-bed hospice and palliative care hub, providing specialist care for patients. Dr. Lara Alloway, consultant in palliative medicine and chief medical officer at Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the hospital in Winchester alongside the two hospitals in Basingstoke and Andover, said, "We know how important local hospice care is for people with life-limiting conditions, as well as for their loved ones. I am delighted we can now provide this care and support as close to home as possible for our patients." Winchester Hospice fundraising charity has raised more than £4.4 million through donations to refurbish Burrell House at Royal Hampshire County Hospital into a 10-bed hospice for people in need of palliative and end-of-life care in and around Winchester. "We are so grateful to everyone who has contributed to this incredible achievement. Every penny raised helps us to open our doors and start accepting our first patients back in September. Of course, this is not the end of our fundraising journey, and we now move on to the next phase, when the charity will continue to contribute to the funding needed to provide and deliver outstanding patient care. The ongoing support of our local community will be crucial to achieving this. One of those who fundraised for the hospice was Paula Stopkinski, who lost her mother, Mally, in October 2017, whose dying wish was to be cared for at home. But because there was not a hospice in the area which could provide at-home care, she was admitted to the Countess of Brecknock in Andover. Since her fundraising mission began, Paula has swum the equivalent of the English Channel, abseiled the Spinnaker Tower, and held coffee mornings. Her recent fundraiser was finishing the Great South Run. Paula, who has a fused ankle, was the last woman to cross the finish line in a time of 3 hours and 10 minutes. Paula said, "I think it is really easy for people not to think about the fact that we don't have a hospice. It is not until you need it you realise. I felt so passionate about it, I pushed myself to the extreme." She added, "It is going to be absolutely amazing. I can't believe this generation of people in Winchester have come together to build a legacy for the area. What an amazing gift to people." Paula of Tuscan Walk, Chandlersford, has raised nearly £6,000 towards the cost of the hospital build and furnishing it.
Thank you, Claire. Well, the last headline story that I'm going to read is headed "Jab Deadline for Care Home Staff." Dozens of care home staff in Hampshire have been forced to leave their jobs after refusing to have 2 doses of the coronavirus vaccine. It comes as the government's mandatory jab policy made it illegal for unvaccinated care home staff to work after midnight last Thursday. Nationally, some estimates say 60,000 workers have been sacked due to not having the vaccine by the deadline, while care homes were short of 100,000 before the pandemic. Local figures are unavailable. But one Winchester worker who has left her post is Abby Louise Luff. Working at Abbott Spartan Care Home for 8 years, she said her mental health has been impacted massively by the issue and had to take 2 weeks sick leave. "It all got a bit much. I was struggling to just have a shower," she said. Miss Luff from Andover continued, "It was a struggle going to work. I've been called stupid. I've been called an idiot. I've had colleagues tell me I'd personally be held responsible for all residents dying." Explaining what the job meant to her, she said, "I just started to do a training nursing course and I paid hundreds of my own money to get BCG vaccines and hepatitis A and B vaccines. The role meant a lot, but if all went down the drain because I didn't want this particular one." Excuse me. "They," the fellow workers, "were all really sad, and I've gone up many job roles, so I've climbed up quite a ladder. I've become one of the best employees there. My manager said it's like losing a member of the family." Another care home operator, Barchester, runs Flower Day down in Hairstock. It said no members of staff have refused to have the vaccine unless for medical reasons. A Barchester spokeswoman said, "Months ago we took the decision that staff working in a Barchester care home or hospital must be vaccinated, and we've carried out extensive internal communications and engagement programmes with staff, as well as one-to-one support to encourage this." Excuse me. As a result, we've seen a strong uptake and positive engagement with the COVID-19 vaccination. We are pleased that all staff across our homes in Hampshire are vaccinated, with the exception of those who are medically exempt. Those staff with valid exemptions will operate with enhanced PPE. Mark Aitchison, Chief Executive of Colden Care, which runs Abbots Barton on Worthy Road and St Catherine's View on Stanmore Lane, said, "All good care home providers will have wanted to do the right thing by their staff and avoid facing the loss of valued team members because of non-vaccination. People who work in care homes are typically loyal, committed and caring, and their work is a fundamental part of the fabric of our society. There is no greater example of that than in the amazing efforts to keep residents safe and happy day in and day out since the start of the pandemic. While abiding by this piece of legislation, we have done everything we can to support individual team members through what has been a very difficult period." Right, well, thank you for those headline stories. We now move on to the death notices, and that will be followed by Claire, who will be reading Christian comment. Rose, could you start, please?
Yes, the first one is Bass, Audrey Bass. Passed away peacefully on the 9th of November 2021, aged 86 years.
Beetham, Carol Ann Beetham. Died peacefully on Tuesday the 9th of November, aged 78 years.
Ead, John Ead, on 9th November 2021, aged 79 years.
Gregory, Werner Gregory, died at West Holm Care Home on the 3rd of November 2021 after a battle with dementia.
Hannah, Wendy Ann Hannah, née Thorne, passed away peacefully at home on the 5th of November, aged 60 years.
Holzapfel, Felix Franzer Holzapfel, sadly passed away on 13th November, aged 70 years.
Hudson, Barbara Hudson, sadly passed away peacefully at home on the 9th of November, aged 81 years.
Gerard, Stephen Paul Steve Gerard, peacefully at home on the 10th of November, 2021, aged 61 years.
King, Tony King, passed away suddenly in Winchester, aged 86.
Lydiard, Isabel Lydiard, sadly passed away on 2nd November, aged 83 years.
Mansell, Barbara Mansell, formerly of Twyford, passed away peacefully at Valley Lodge.
MacDonald, Stephen Lawrence MacDonald, passed away peacefully at home on Remembrance Sunday, November the 14th.
Mort, George Mort. George passed away on the 11th of November, peacefully, in his chair at home.
And finally, sadly, my brother Derek Harper, Derek John Stephen Harper, passed suddenly and unexpectedly on Friday the 29th of October 2021, aged 88.
Thank you. Now, Claire, could we move on to Christian comment, please?
Certainly. This is headed Extending Thanksgivings and is written by Rosemary A. Baker. We came home from 2 weeks in Scotland on Sunday. Leaving early and with good weather and with reasonable traffic, we had an uneventful and safe journey. This was in complete contrast to the last leg of our journey up to the east coast of Scotland 2 weeks ago. The first part of the journey, with an overnight stay, was uneventful. As we set off on the Sunday, it was a bit grey, but we made good time to Edinburgh, where we had lunch. As we left Perth, driving on smaller roads, the rain became quite heavy. Driving beyond Blairgowrie, The roads were very wet with torrents of water and gravel cascading down the hillside. Excuse me. Just before Bridge of Calais, we joined a stationary queue of half a dozen cars. We learnt that a car was stuck on the bridge, having been washed there by 3 feet of water, which also took away the side of the bridge. Thankfully, the occupants were safe. 2 fire engines later, we were able to turn around and make our way back to Blairgowrie. After several attempts to find alternatives, we went on the M90 to Aberdeen and made our way to Ballater on flooded roads. Well, the rest of the 2 weeks was relatively uneventful, weather and driving-wise, and we were able to resume our usual pattern of visiting our favourite places, mixed with a little retail therapy. We also visited the beautiful spot where, over the years, we had erected a cairn to remember departed relatives, friends and much-loved pets. We were able to add some stones for special friends and relatives we had lost due to COVID. Later, looking for Christmas gifts in one of the larger garden centres, I was looking at a section on diaries and cards when a rather drab grey book caught my eye. The writing on it was very small, so I looked more closely and saw that it was called a gratitude journal. This struck me as very interesting and I thought, what a good idea. As a psychiatrist, I have always encouraged people to try and be positive and, as the old saying goes, count their blessings. Often nowadays when people die, their funerals are called services of thanksgiving as we celebrate their lives and what they have meant to us. Last Sunday was Remembrance Sunday. At the service that was held during the Festival of Remembrance in the Albert Hall, a book of remembrance is brought forward and placed on the drum altar. In many of the churches in which I take services, a book is brought forward at the beginning of the service containing requests for prayers. Sometimes this also includes thanksgiving for those who have died. I think this is a good idea and could be extended to other things we're thankful for. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you, Claire. Right, well, we move on to letters to the editor now, starting, please, with a letter that will be read by Rosalind.
Yes, indeed. And it is from Dale Thompson. Sir, I was very pleased to read in the last 2 editions of the Chronicle that the City Council has arranged with the University of Southampton to bring us a building in River Park near the School of Art that will have spaces for performances, theatre, etc. That was something we could all go and see. It is bound to enhance the area. It should bring Winchester a boost in visitors and tourists and can't fail to be good for the shops and restaurants and pubs in the city. The proposals for the River Park also sound very promising. I cannot understand why your correspondent in this week's Chronicle did not welcome the development. In my view, we could hardly have found anything more benign for the city. And that's Dale Thompson, Compton Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Ross. Richard?
This from Tim Fell. Sir, your report of the continuing campaign for a Lido, or Lido, on the site of the old leisure centre, and Judith Martin's letter on the same subject, both November the 11th, make me wonder whether you and Judith watched the same team's presentation of the council's proposal as I did. It is not a scheme for an expanded campus for Southampton University, as you report, and it is not a process whose terms are far from clear but will lead to a 150-year lease, as claimed by Judith. the Council's intention is quite clear. It is to contract the university for an initial 5 years to conduct thorough public consultation and, on the basis of that, to bring forward detailed proposals for, and I quote verbatim, a multidisciplinary cultural facility which would contain, amongst other things, to be decided in the course of the consultation, a flexible performance space. In answer to the question from a member of the public, Professor Lynch, head of the School of Art, said that it would be working closely with Winchester University in doing this. Only if and when these detailed proposals are adopted will the university be offered a 150-year lease to build and operate the facility. It must surely be obvious that a facility of this kind will benefit far more people in and around Winchester than the limited number who enjoy year-round open-air swimming. And it should not be forgotten that universities can access funding that is not available to local authorities. Witness the amount of new building that Southampton University has commissioned in recent years on its main campus, and that Winchester University has commissioned in Winnell off the Andover Road and in Romsey Road. I've never been shy of criticising Winchester City Council in the past, but on this occasion, I believe they have shown far-sighted imagination and taken a decision that promises to provide Winchester with a really valuable asset. Tim Fell, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
This is another letter on the same subject. Here we go. This is a call to pause negotiations on River Park and conduct a well-advertised six-month public consultation. It was my understanding that at this stage of development, proposals for River Park were still open. However, having attended the online River Park update on 1st November, I was aghast at how far negotiations with the University of Southampton had gone. From what I observed, it certainly seems like the decision to sell it to them has already been done. Being objective, I can see the appeal of partnering with the university, but I fear that without a robust public consultation, we will miss out on an opportunity to gather great ideas from the community and probably explore well-supported proposals such as Alido. If the City Council truly wants to listen and represent the people, I urge them to pause negotiations with the University of Southampton whilst they genuinely consider other proposals from the community with a well-advertised six-month public consultation. After that, if the proposal with the university turns out to be the best one, then nothing has been lost. But it makes sense that local residents should be given the opportunity to submit our ideas with plenty of time to put proposals together. In hope that common sense prevails. Sam Feltham, Longfield Road, Winnell, Winchester.
Thank you, Claire. And now I'm sure you're not going to believe this, but there's another letter on the same subject, this time written by David Rowe, headed River Park. Sir, it's almost hard to believe that even the present administration at Winchester City Council genuinely believe their spin that the latest vision for River Park in any way benefits the people of Winchester. Judith Martin's letter in last week's Chronicle highlighted the complete lack of information from the present partners and stakeholders, save for the glib tagline of a bit of Southampton in Winchester, which hardly reflects the blatant monoculture experienced on offer at the Art College in recent years, one that is exclusive, unwelcoming, and makes little, if any, attempt to embrace and enrich the art and cultural experience of the community it is nominally based in. Almost 30 years ago, I was unfortunate, oblique misguided enough, to study for an MA at the Royal Holloway and Bedford New College, which, even then, hid its pitiful offering behind a greenwash of offering a truly multicultural experience. In reality, it was nothing more than a cash cow for the university, offering nothing in the way of language support for the overseas students, resulting in an appalling dumbing down of any academic standards and the opportunity for the student body to creatively share. We are currently being missold a pup, dressed up in the tedious selling off the family silver rhetoric of the stakeholders and partners. No doubt the present tuition fee enabling administration at Winchester City Council will be tasked one of their usual spokesmen, Councillor Todd, to reframe the benefits of this proposal, public transport and booking access to the new out-of-town leisure centre currently leaps to mind. And that is written by David Rowe of Falconview, Badger Farm, Winchester. Rods, please.
Yes, this is from Diane Diner Ashcroft. I hope I got that right. Sir, Hugh Lumby, letters, November the 4th, believes that some areas of Hampshire receive more attention than others from Winchester City Council. He also claims correctly that staff numbers working with Winchester City Council have been allowed to decrease. The present administration has had a majority in Winchester for a brief time. Successive Conservative governments in Westminster have been whittling away local government resources for years. Blame them. And that's Dinah Ashcroft, West Street, Oldsford.
Thank you, Ros. Richard?
Yeah, this is headed Rambling Letter, which has multiple meanings. And it comes from Russell Gordon Smith, who is the Cabinet Member for the Built Environment at Winchester City Council. In reply to Councillor Lumby's rambling and discursive letter, chronicled November the 4th, which raises a range of mostly unrelated topics, there's little justification in suggesting that the south of the district does not receive a fair share of planning officers' time, and he provides no supporting evidence for the allegation. The largest developments under construction in the district lie in the south and, quite rightly, take up much officer time. The local plan now being developed covers the whole district. There's never ceased to be liaison between senior planning officers in the Winchester district and Fareham Borough on the topic of Wellbourne. There are currently discussions on the best arrangements to be put in place now that outline planning permission has been granted and that the development is moving into the reserved matters and implementation stage. Any such arrangements have to be agreed by all parties. Wellbourne lies within the jurisdiction. Oh, excuse me.
Wow. Bless you.
So sorry. Bet you sneeze this letter. Currently discussions on the best arrangements to be put in place now that outline planning permission has been granted and the development is moving into the reserve matters and implementation stage. Any such arrangements have to be agreed by all parties. Wellbourne lies within the jurisdiction of Fareham and Winchester City Council are only consultees. The outline planning application for Wellbourne was submitted in 2017 when the previous administration was in control. So it is surprising that Councillor Lumby has waited 4 years to wake from his slumbers and to raise concerns over traffic. Wellbourne is intended to be a south-facing development with deliberate discouragement to traffic movement north up the A32 due to be put in place, just as changes to the road system between Wellbourne and Wickham. Winchester City Council will ensure that these happen. Two primary schools and a secondary school and a local surgery and retail area are part of the development, so there's no reason to suppose undue demand will be placed on Wickham. Winchester City Council will do all they can to ensure that these facilities are built at the appropriate time. Local authorities have been steadily undermined by central government for some years as it endeavours to take back control. And it's richly ironic now to be criticised for the resulting limited resources. Winchester City Council attracts and retains a good level of experienced officers, but of course there are no more immune to staffing problems than haulage companies, abattoirs and farmers. Of noteworthy relevance is the successful effort Winchester City Council has made to build up their planning enforcement team. I am, of course, available to Councillor Lumbey, as to all residents of the district, listen to genuine concerns and valid criticism. Russell Gordon-Smith, Cabinet Member for the Built Environment, Worcester City Council, Ward Member for New Alsford and the Itchen Valley, West Street, Alsford.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
Rob Youngman has headed this Manners and Man. The other day, when travelling home by bus, we stopped at the pedestrian crossing by St Michael's Road to allow a group of Winchester College boys to cross. Not one of them acknowledged the driver. Many years ago, when a vehicle halted in similar circumstances, the boys, who all wore straw boaters, would tip their hats to thank the driver. Perhaps the Winchester College motto of Manners Maketh Man has waned a little. Rod Youngman, Cromwell Road, Stanmore, Winchester.
Thank you, Claire. I've got a rather sad letter now, written by Jill Henbest. It's headed Eco Vandals. Sir, my daughter lives on a quiet lane in Twyford that is, in actual fact, not open to the public. Basically, only the people who live on the lane and the farm vehicles use it. On the evening of the 2nd of November, the body of their beloved cat was found with head injuries where she'd been hit by a vehicle. Images from a neighbour's security camera show a vehicle passing at speed, which we believe the one used in the case of fly tipping, at about the same time that the cat died. I am so angry. On two counts. One, the heartache caused by an accident that needn't have happened, and two, the fly tipping. I hope you print this in the hope that these eco-vandals see it and understand the dire consequences of their illegal behaviour. That was written by Jill Henbest of Picket Peace, Andover.
Well, I have a slightly more positive letter, and I'm really happy to read it because it's by a friend of mine who's been at the Theatre Royal for many, many years.
Yes.
I know. He's my friend. It's headed Dame Judy at Theatre Royal. Sir, reading the report of Dame Judy Dench's visit to the Theatre Royal recently to support Home Start Winchester reminded me of her two previous visits. On the first occasion, she was again with her biographer John Miller, and on the second occasion, she brought actors Bill Nighy and the late Ian Richardson with her. On this visit, I was the house manager, and one of my duties was to look after guests, and after the performance, I was in charge of drinks. In a conversation with her, she said, "What a pretty little theatre you have in Winchester." I thanked her for her kind words. She then added, "You're all so friendly." I replied that maybe it was because nearly all front of house and some working backstage were volunteers. Dame Judy thought for a moment and then said, "Tell them from me that they're doing a grand job and thank you for looking after us so well tonight." I did as she said, and the volunteers were so pleased to receive that message. A lovely lady. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Thank you, Ros. Richard?
An altogether less happier customer.
Oh.
Sir, I concur fully with Joanna Lewis's view, Chronicle November 4th, that we need new decision makers if ever we have any hope of saving our country. As the Right Honourable Steve Brine is so fond of reminding us, he was a former Parliamentary Under Secretary of State for Public Health and Primary Care. Given his concern for our health, about which he often trumpets, it beggars belief that he did not stand and be counted against a vote permitting yet more raw sewage to be dumped into our rivers and seas. It's high time that our sitting MP takes to his feet and walks away while he still can. It's well known that he's coined £60,000 a year giving advice to three healthcare companies. It's amazing he can spare time. Or has he forgotten that his overriding responsibility is to his constituents? One could be forgiven for believing that our Prime Minister believes that his role includes having a good time at whoever's expense, furthering the interests of his friends and supporters, and doing down his enemies. I feel sure that Mr. Brine utterly rejects this view of parliamentary behaviour. Una Stevens, Cliff Way, Compton.
Thank you, Richard. Clare.
This letter is headed Dental Pain. It is said that one learns something new every day, and today has been one of those days. Because I have a tooth that has disintegrated, I called in at Marlfield House, where I have been a patient for some 20 years, to make an appointment to see a dentist, only to be told that as I had not been visiting every 6 months, I had been deregistered and therefore could not make any appointment to see a dentist. In all of the 63 years of my adult life, it has never been suggested to me that there was a requirement to visit an NHS dentist every 6 months, nor have I ever been warned that irregular attendance would result in denial of medical assistance, nor indeed was I advised that I was about, or liable, to be deregistered, which one would have thought was required. The decision is entirely arbitrary. I would very much doubt that such a six-monthly regulation exists within the NHS, and that Bupa, which recently took over at Marlfield House, has invented such a requirement to find an excuse to weed out NHS patients and replace them with those who still pay for private treatment so that more profit can be made. One wonders if the NHS is aware that some dentists are churning patients in this manner for profit, requiring attendance every 6 months, so that the NHS can be billed, making those patients use the service inappropriately, more frequently and unnecessarily. Also, is the NHS aware that patients are being cast adrift without warning? John Seeger Green, Hospital of St Cross, St Cross, Winchester.
Thank you, Claire. I've got a letter now written by Russell Wheeler, and it's also about the MP for Winchester, Steve Brine. And it's headed, Second Job. Sir, following his Damascene conversion to the cause of getting Brexit done and all the damage to the economy that has been already wrought, watch this space, that damage is far from over, followed by his recent vote against controls on sewage discharge, as reported here, it was in vain that I sought to find Steve Brine's name among the Tory rebels who refused to vote in favour of corruption in the Commons last week, or at least amongst those that abstained. My letter to him as a constituent conveyed my disappointment, did not anticipate a reply, and of course did not receive one. What could possibly say in mitigation? Perhaps the answer lies in Mr. Brine's inclusion in another list that has surfaced in recent days, that the number of MPs deriving significant income from outside interests whilst continuing to serve as a constituency MP. In Mr. Brine's case, some £58,000 for about 40 days a year, and hard to see the public interest being served by his work for Remedium, Microlink and Sigma, all of which presumably rose as a result of his brief tenure at the Department of Health. No possible conflict there, then. Oh, except that we learned that he attended a webinar with Sigma, with the vaccines minister, in February, not long before they were awarded a contract. Although, admittedly, this was small beer at £100,000 compared with some of the more outrageous examples out there. No suggestion of wrongdoing here, per se. But are we really OK with an MP's work being regarded as a part-time occupation, as it is for some? When are the voters of Winchester going to wake up to what is going on right under their noses? This is written by Russell Wheeler, Chemin de chez Rude, Mersac, France. Ros, please.
And finally, Penelope Newstead heads her letter, Ban Fireworks. Sir, fireworks are a waste of money and cruel to animals. It's time to call it a day and ban all sale of fireworks. Penelope Newstead, Webster Road, Takedown.
It was. It's a nice short letter to finish off with. So that's the end of our letters for this week. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject that you'd like to hear in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836, or you can email them news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, or you could even drop in if you're next in Winchester. Well, after that we have editorial comment is on the future of King's Walk Shopping Arcade. There are lots of interesting questions about the future of businesses in King's Walk Arcade. We report that Sunflowers Emporium and Suki Market have been told to leave the property as the City Council begins to transform it into an arts and creative hub. The traders say they've been informed they don't fit into a creative vibe the council is trying to nurture. Apparently, the tattooist, record shop and tailors do. We would like to find out the reasoning, and we'll report on it when we hear from the council. And this is a difficult issue. The council is attempting, with broad public support, to make better use of King's Walk, which in time will be a key part of the Silver Hill redevelopment. Most people want to see independent shops not just survive but thrive in Winchester. Contrary to widespread opinion, there are actually scores of them in the city centre, just no longer on the high street itself. It is ironic, but perhaps unavoidable, and certainly a source of regret, that in creating something sustainable for the long term, there are independent victims in the short term. Right, after that we now have the opinion piece written by read by Richard, please.
Thank you, and written by George Hayter, who tells us how you can improve things. Please, complain about this column. For a long time now, my 4 weekly contributions have just not been good enough. Consistently, they've failed to provide much interest or humour, and I worry that some of them may not even have made sense. Until generous readers like you find the time to fire off a stiff letter of complaint to the editor, the unsatisfactory offering that appears under my name every 4 weeks is unlikely to improve. However, if you detect, however unlikely, some faint trace of quality or some momentary spark of entertainment in what you are reading now, then a letter of appreciation could be in order. Fan mail might save my job, and just like a letter of complaint, it would encourage me to carry on trying harder. In the 20 years that I've been writing opinion columns for the Chronicle group of papers, I've received just 3 letters from readers. There may have been hundreds more that were intercepted by colleagues wanting to spare my feelings. One that did reach me was a merciless reaction from a country dweller to my contention that you're better off living in a suburb because you don't get your feet muddy when you go for a walk. That taught me to clear steer of habitat. Another one was actually a postcard rather than a letter thanking me for something that they'd found funny. That made me put in more jokes. Third, a retail boss contacted me to say he agreed that busy shop staff should try to field queries from other customers at the same time as taking payments from the customer heading the queue. That reassured me that I'd made a valid point. I was encouraged. All three people who wrote in did me a favour. Most people criticise more than praise. In the 80s, the BBC kept a diary of comments made by viewers phoning Television Centre. I once had the opportunity to look through that duty office log, and I can reveal that very few people just rang in to say how much they'd enjoyed a programme. Almost every call was a complaint, most of them about Nationwide, an early evening current affairs programme. Nice as it is to receive praise, receiving criticism is often more useful. Criticism forces us to consider the need for change. Being on the receiving end of criticism often feels lousy, but on a recent family holiday on the French canals, I made a verbal complaint that seemed to go down well. I had to speak out when dealing with the woman in the office boatyard. I was returning the keys to the vessel we'd hired. We'd had a few rows on our holiday, mostly in the form of a mutiny by certain family members who objected to me appointing myself captain. So I was in a rotten mood, and when the woman behind the desk was abrupt and surly, I found myself complaining that her manner was unacceptable. She stopped what she was doing, put her laptop down and looked at me in the eye. Oh dear, I thought, here we go. I shouldn't have said that. Amazingly, the woman was saying, thank you. I was the first customer who told her what she'd long suspected, and now she knew she had to be more polite. It was very helpful feedback, she said. She'd wondered what customers really thought. Complaining is a public duty. I do my share of complaining. I'm asking the checkout supervisor at busy supermarkets to open up another till, for example. I like to balance my complaining with praise, for example, to checkout staff who are fast and friendly. It's easy to please people by saying nice things, but to complain you need tact. I find complaining is best done without shouting or waving my arms around. You have to be polite.
Bravo.
Thank you, Richard. Nice piece. Now, as we know, Belgarum has a different view of the news, so we've got three items from Belgarum. Starting off with Ros, please.
Yes, this one is close to my heart as well. It's headed Behind the Red Door. On the fourth day of December at 10:30 a.m, why not find out what's behind the red door in Chesil Street? For the first time since March 2020, the company will be holding their monthly open morning for visitors to see inside the Grade 2 listed building. More than 300 plays have been presented since St Peter's Chesil was converted to a theatre in the 1960s. Since then, sophisticated technology has been installed to enhance performances and complement the traditional skills of set building and the design and creation of costumes. Ros Lydiard, that's me, who set up his open morning, said, "We offer a warm welcome, a tour of the theatre, coffee and homemade cake, and a chance to find out more about our thriving society." The theatre is set to embark on ambitious plans to increase the size of the theatre. The Victorian house next door, until the mid-80s, the base for Early's coal merchant, see previous Belgarums, will be demolished to allow for a foyer, studio space, storage and improved backstage facilities. Do join us. You'll be welcome.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah. Thank you, Ros. Claire, please.
This is about wild swimming in 1903. Right, we're going back. The issue of outdoor bathing has captured the attention of many people in Winchester. A campaign has garnered the support of some 3,000 people for a Lido on the site of the now closed River Park Leisure Centre on Gordon Road. Its supporters say Lidos are becoming increasingly popular elsewhere in the UK. There is a splendid photo of the public swimming in Winchester on a windy day more than 100 years ago. The smartly dressed man looks to be standing on a diving board and holds a life buoy ring, although it is hard to believe he is a lifeguard. It was taken at the public bathing place, at Bulldrove off Garnier Road in St Cross. The pool was fed by the River Itchen, and so would have been a constant temperature of around 10 degrees a year, as the river is fed from underground aquifers. The pool closed in 1974, when the River Park Leisure Centre in Hyde was opened. Apparently, the pool is still there, but is now completely overgrown. Perhaps a campaign could be launched to get it reopened, although the landowners, Winchester College, might have something to say about that. The photo comes from Winchester Illustrated, published in 1903 by Warren and Son, then, as now, based on the High Street and reproduced with their kind permission.
Right, thank you for that, Claire. Now, I've got a very significant piece here. It is headed, City Pub Wins Loo Accolade. A Winchester pub has won acclaim for the quality and standards of its toilets in the Loo of the Year Awards 2021. The old jailhouse in Jury Street has been awarded a platinum rating by inspectors. The awards are aimed at highlighting and improving standards of away-from-home toilet provision across the UK. Awards inspectors make unannounced visits to thousands of toilets at sites across the UK in order to judge them. All of the toilets are graded silver, gold, platinum or diamond, with unacceptable toilets not graded at all. The toilets are judged against numerous criteria, including decor and maintenance, cleanliness, accessibility, hand washing and drying equipment, and overall management. The old jailhouse, a Wetherspoon pub, is managed by Hannah Barrett. Hannah said, "We are delighted with the award. Staff at the pub ensure the toilets are in excellent condition at all times, and it is great that this has been recognised by the inspectors." Right, thank you for those items. Now we come to sort of what's on. So what's on in the next sort of week or so? Well, the Cathedral Christmas Market has just opened on Friday the 19th of November, and it will run till Wednesday the 22nd of December. Always worth a visit if you'd like that sort of thing. Sunday the 21st of November, at 2:30 and 4:30 in the afternoon, there's the Theatre Royal Winchester. Ian Waite and Vincent Simone of Strictly Come Dancing are set to return with a brand new show. And the third item of what's on is an item that Ros is going to read.
Yes, I am. It's exciting because Christmas comes early at Museum. Christmas comes early to a Hampshire attraction this month when it plays host to a fundraising Christmas bazaar on Saturday, November the 20th. The Army Flying Museum will welcome over 20 local traders and artists inside its hangars, giving people the chance to buy a range of special gifts for their loved ones. Alongside the vendors will be festive music provided by members of Shoot and Silver Band, and there'll be an opportunity to have a unique professional photograph taken with Santa in one of the museum's helicopters. There will also be Christmas craft activities for children provided by Feathered Skies Nursery and Preschool, and a Christmas raffle. Event organiser Hannah Gregson said, "We're very excited about this fun new event for families, which we hope will get people in a festive mood in the run-up to Christmas. From Christmas puddings to Christmas trees, with arts and crafts and food and drink, there should be something for everyone. Entry costs £3 for adults, with under-16s entry free, and includes a small mulled wine or hot apple juice, blackcurrant, winter spice and a mince pie. Spaces are limited, so visitors are being encouraged to book in advance to avoid disappointment."
Now, before we go on to the items of general news, I know that you are on the edge of your seats waiting for the times of lighting up and sunrise.
Yes, please.
Good. Well, over the next week, sunrise will be about 7:30 in the morning, strangely enough, and it'll be sunset at 4:15 in the afternoon. So on to items of general news, please, starting with Richard.
Yes, well, more doom and gloom. Councillor hits out at repeated budget cuts. A senior councillor has hit out at the endless cycle of doom surrounding ongoing budget cuts at Hampshire County Council. It comes as councillors met to discuss an £80 million black hole in the county's budget. It needs to be dealt with by April 2023. Current budget cut plans include £22.6 million being slashed from children's services and £3.3 million from culture and communities. An additional £10.2 million is set to be cut from transport and environment, including an £800,000 cut to community transport services. A budget update will be put to the council next month, with the budget and council tax being finalised in February next year. This is the sixth time we've been through this process since the start of government austerity even, said Liberal Democrat leader Councillor House. There's no strategy beyond yet more cuts to public services in the future. Instead, what we have is a recipe for long-term decline. It's an endless cycle of doom. Council leader Councillor Keith Mann said the financial forecast ahead leaves us facing a considerable balancing act in trying to meet residents' needs, given the backdrop of diminishing budgets and rising demands for services. Even so, with continued firm financial management and a strong track record of high performance, as well as meeting all our statutory duties, we will continue to do everything possible to address the issues we know people care about most.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
Pony dies after fireworks panic. An endangered pony has died at Danebury Hill Fort after being frightened by rockets set off in the area over bonfire night weekend. The Exmoor mare was one of a herd of five of the rare breed kept by Juliet Burnett, which are semi-feral and intended to graze the nature reserve for conservation purposes. Going backwards. Juliet said that occasions when fireworks are likely to be set off cause a lot of stress for her and the animals, but that on this occasion it was a case of explosives being illegally set off close to livestock, which caused one of her ponies to run in fright and fall to her death.
Oh.
Juliet from Nether Wallop said, "We have had quite a lot of trouble with antisocial behaviour here recently, but that was the worst weekend of fireworks I have ever known." The 56-year-old, who works as the caretaker at Wirral Primary School, said that when she visited the horses on Saturday morning following an organised display on Friday night in nearby Middle Wallop, she could see that they had had a terrible night. Leaving her herd, she said she hoped the worst had been and gone. "What you do is you go to bed and you keep your fingers crossed," she said. However, when she arrived on Sunday morning, She could see an empty box of rockets, a lighter, and other fireworks debris. I straight away clocked that there were only four ponies. I actually lost it. I rang my son and he came round. Juliet's son found the youngest of the herd, 14-year-old mare Knight and Com, Ghost Swift, strange name, who had fallen into the middle of the ring, likely caused by running in fear. Exmoor ponies are very rare, with Juliet saying there are only about 3,000 in the world. She added, to lose a mare in that way is absolutely appalling. I was absolutely beside myself. The public love them up there, and it educates them about one of our really rarest breeds. People are very lucky to see them, because it's very rare to see an Exmoor out of Exmoor. Those rockets they let off were TNT rockets. Can you imagine? It's the noise and the flashing in the sky. It must have been absolutely terrifying. And to do that on what is a nature reserve is diabolical. Juliet added, she was a sassy mare with attitude. She was in the prime of her life. They can live to 30 out in the moor. She didn't deserve to die. The four remaining ponies were very upset. Part of the area which is open to the public was closed while the pony was taken away. They had to clear the pathway. It was quite a difficult retrieval, said Juliet. I was down at the entrance asking people if they could only walk in the left-hand field. The people were really good, but one guy was horrible to me. Juliet explained that fireworks are always a concern for her, but that organised displays can be prepared for. She said, I don't like fireworks, but I do think that organised displays are fine. I don't want to spoil people's fun, but I can't prepare if I don't know about them. This business of letting off random explosives is not on. Juliet fought for 2 years to be allowed to introduce the ponies to the land, which is owned by Hampshire County Council. But since the incident, she has moved one of them to her own field in Werwell and hopes to soon relocate the other three as well. Police were called to the scene on Sunday, November the 7th, following reports of antisocial behaviour in the Longstock Park area. As a result of the incident, officers investigating believe that one of the ponies had been spooked and was later found deceased in the immediate area. A Hampshire County Council spokesperson said, we were extremely saddened to learn of the death of a horse last weekend at Danebury Hill Fort. We have been in contact with the horse's owner and offered her our support. Anyone with any information is asked to call 101, quoting 442 10 446 761.
Difficult number to remember. However, this story is headed Lucky Escape for Lorry Driver. The A272 remained closed for more than 24 hours near Winchester after a lorry overturned on Monday morning. The heavy goods vehicle slewed off the road near Cheesfoot Head, causing the road to be closed all day, only reopening on Tuesday afternoon. The driver was not seriously injured, and it was unclear if he needed to go to hospital, but was very shaken up, according to firefighters. Police expected the road to have remained shut until at least 9 a.m. on Tuesday so the carriageway could be repaired overnight, but in the end it was shut for longer, opening at around 3 p.m. on Tuesday. Drivers were asked to find alternative routes. The closure caused congestion around East Winchester and the other side of the crash site at the Cheriton and Oslebury areas. In a tweet, Winchester Fire Station said, a very lucky escape for one lorry driver yesterday morning. Winchester crews responded to an overturned lorry. The driver escaped with no injuries, just very shaken up. As winter sets in, take extra care as the mornings get darker and the roads more slippery. Roz, please.
Support for A&E petition tops 6,000. A petition to stop the feared closure of Winchester's emergency department has gained 660,000 signatures and is nearing its target. The campaign aims to stop the potential relocation of the accident and emergency department to Basingstoke from Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The online petition has a target of 7,000. It argues that the A&E department should stay in Winchester because of its growing population. The A&E department would be in a new hospital proposed for just south of Basingstoke or the existing Basingstoke hospital site. However, the petition says it should be too far away. Some of the comments from petition supporters show how much of a lifeline it is for Winchester residents. One said, I am a student at the university and I suffer chronic illness and a multiple number of medical conditions and therefore use the emergency department at this hospital regularly. I am fortunate enough to live opposite it and rely on its services greatly. And if it moved, it would have such a negative impact on me. This hospital's A&E department is a lifeline for me. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust said no firm decision has been made as to the future of services.
Thank you, Ross. Richard.
Some rather brighter news at last.
Aha.
National Express is returning to Winchester. National Express is resuming its service following its controversial withdrawal in September. The service will now be stopping at St Catherine's Park and Ride car park at Bar End from Friday. The company had stopped its service to the city, saying the Broadway drop-off point was too narrow for its new larger vehicles. That sparked a major backlash from travellers, many of whom had their plans disrupted at short notice. It meant the nearest stop was at Southampton University. The local authorities sought to retain the service and offered National Express alternative solutions. A National Express spokesperson said, "We will be resuming National Express coach services to Winchester, stopping at St Catherine's Park and Ride as of this Friday, November the 19th. We've been working closely with Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council to make this possible. Our event services will also continue to stop at Worthy Lane Coach Park, as many of these serve Winchester at times when the park and ride bus service has stopped operating. We're grateful to both councils for finding a solution." Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Economic Recovery, said, "It's great to have National Express coaches back in Winchester."
Indeed, yes, thanks, Richard. Claire, please.
Winchester falls silent for a day of remembrance. Winchester fell silent on Sunday to pay their respects to the fallen. The Remembrance Parade returned this year with members of the Armed Forces and veterans. The parade left Winchester Guildhall and concluded at the Cathedral, where large numbers attended a service in the Cathedral and many others gathered outside by the War Memorial, the first in-person Remembrance Sunday event since before the pandemic. A two-minute silence was observed at 11 a.m., followed by prayers and the national anthem. The Right Reverend Debbie Sellin, Bishop of Southampton, joined other local representatives to lay wreaths at the war memorial. Bishop Debbie said, "Each year we come together in the presence of God to give thanks for all those who have given their lives for us. We are reminded of their sacrifice and pray for those who mourn them." Winchester College held their own Remembrance Sunday service in the school chapel and an act of remembrance in the War Cloister. In Alsford, a Remembrance Day service was held inside St John's Church and concluded with a two-minute silence held outside at the War Memorial. In Bishop's Waltham, a Remembrance Day parade marched along the High Street to St Peter's Church, where a service was held. To remember the fallen, a Winchester care home created a public display of remembrance which was boosted by a community appeal. The cascade of nearly 800 knitted or crocheted poppies features prominently outside St Catherine's View, providing a focal point for the home's residents, staff, visitors and passers-by to reflect on. Laura Sheldrake, companionship team leader at the Stanmore Lane home, invited friends and contacts in the community to contribute to what one resident's daughter has described as a moving and beautiful display. Laura said one Winchester lady, Mo White, knitted nearly 300 poppies alone, an incredible amount. I think she was starting to knit them in her sleep at the end. We also thank city residents Melanie Etheridge and Zara Coleman, who knitted and crocheted over 100 each. The combined total, including those from the community and those made by St Catherine's View residents and staff, was 795. Chris George, chairman of the Royal British Legion's Winchester branch, said, "It is important that everyone has the opportunity to remember, and Laura has made sure that has happened for the residents at St Catherine's View. I would also like to thank the wider community of Winchester for coming together to help create such a beautiful display. I look forward to working with Laura and St Catherine's View in the future." On Armistice Day, a two-minute silence was held on the Guildhall steps with the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Vivian Ashwell, council officials and members of the Royal British Legion in attendance.
Thank you, Claire. This story is headed Concerns Over Park Proposals. Councillors have welcomed plans to revamp Winchester's biggest park, but not everyone is happy. As reported, the City Council has watered down proposals for North Walls Recreation Ground and dropped ideas such as the sculpture, tower, mini golf, but has suggested a splash park for children, a cafe, toilets and paddling for toddlers. The name will be changed to River Park. But stakeholders raise concerns at the Winchester Town Forum. Hampshire Wildlife Trust fears the plans could impact upon wildlife in the Winnell Moors Reserve. And Winchester Sports, Art and Leisure Trust fears a lost opportunity for informal play. Rachel Remnant of the Wildlife Trust was worried about the impact of wild swimming, which has grown during the lockdown. She said plans that would have increased the use of the park would impact on wildlife on Whittle Moors. The Trust has had problems this summer with children swimming in the reserve, damaging the banks and disturbing wildlife. No water bowls have been in Whittle Moors for 2 years, she told the forum. Emma Black said the plan to provide no more mugger facilities. Mugger stands for Multiple Use Games Area. A free outdoor area for football and basketball, the two most popular sports in the UK. She said the Mugger that was demolished for the skate park had never been replaced, as was promised. Other parts of the city had also lost their Muggers, including Wick and Stanmore. Ms. Back said it would be a travesty if this was overlooked again. Susan Lord, Council Outdoor Recreation Officer, said muggers had not been popular in the public consultation compared to a cafe and toilet, but it had been difficult to balance everyone's desires. but Councillor Martin Todd said the public consultation had missed the young and working class, saying responses to the council's public consultation tended to be skewed to middle-aged, middle-class people, adding that it isn't everybody in the city. Councillor Mike Crask suggested moving the cricket pitches closer to Winnall Moors and the noisier activities closer to the houses in Hyde. Cabinet member Kelsey Lurney said a previous idea to reduce the size of one of the two pitches had nearly caused a riot. Discussion of the park plan sparked wider discussion about access to the river. Wild swimming was becoming increasingly popular at North Moors and other places such as Compton Lock, St Cross and Itchen Abbas. Councillor Todd said Winchester College had a silted-up water access called Gunner's Hole and suggested discussions with them about access to their riverbanks. Councillor Charles Radcliffe said the college's charitable status meant that it had to engage with the wider public, saying that it is something we could explore in the future. The Town Forum is setting up a new working group on wild swimming with Chairman Councillor Kathleen Becker and Councillors Todd and John Tippett Cooper as members. Councillor Lurney said that she thought the park plans struck a balance between nature and encouraging people to be active. We are giving people new options, a splash park, better and appropriate river access, and giving other parts of the parks a spruce up and make people able to feel really proud of the park. Councillor Tippett Cooper said the public consultation had worked with the dropping of unpopular such ideas such as the tyranny of the tower and the yellow banana bridge. There is something for everyone in this park plan. Councillor Ernie told the Hampshire Chronicle after the meeting, "It's exciting that the park plan has been approved by Town Forum. It is a product of 3 years' consultation and work and provides a master plan for one of Winchester's most important open spaces, which has something in it for everyone. We have been responding to local views on both what residents would like to see added or improved, and the great things about the park that they love."
There is a slightly positive note in this next item, but it is about COVID. COVID numbers are still declining fast, it says. COVID is currently on the wane in the Winchester district, except for two places, Alsford and Oliver's Battery and Hursley. In the 7 days to November the 10th, the most recent day for which local figures are available, there were 490 cases reported in the Winchester district, a drop of 22% on the previous 7 days, for a rolling figure of 389 per 10,000 people. Numbers are dropping in 10 areas: Winchester West, Winchester East, Winchester North and Sparsholt, Winchester Central, South, Stanmore, Coldon Common and Twyford, Swanmore, West Meon and Hambledon, Whiteley Knoll and Wickham, Bishop's Waltham and Waltham Chase and Denmead and Southwark. I sound like I've just read the football results. There was no change in the numbers in Springvale, in Itchen Abbas, and South Wanston, Sutton Scotney and Mitchell Dever. There are 48 COVID patients in hospital, 37 in Basingstoke, 10 in Winchester and 1 in Andover. Last week, 43, with 14 at Royal Hampshire County Hospital.
Thank you, Ros. Richard?
Prolific criminals sentenced for stealing cathedral safe. A pair of prolific criminals who stole a safe containing thousands of pounds from Winchester Cathedral have been sentenced. John Gillingham and David Rolfe have been drinking when they entered the cathedral on August the 9th to avoid the rain. they were said to be acting suspiciously by a member of the staff who reported them to the Verger. After the employee left, CCTV showed Gillingham and Rolfe searching behind the entrance desk before taking a safe, using a wheeled chair to make off with it. The safe contained £2,500 and a Motorola mobile phone. At Winchester Crown Court on Friday, the judge, Mr. Recorder R. Week, said this was an opportunistic crime. In mitigation for Rolfe, his representative said that he has an unenviable record, adding it's been difficult over the years for this defendant to find any footing to try and recover from the need to use drugs and alcohol. Rolfe has 39 convictions for 87 offences, 64 of them for theft matters, while Gillingham has 33 convictions for 61 offences. Mr. Gillingham is in a very similar cycle or spiral to addiction. She added, Mr. Gillingham has said to me that he now accepts this was a complete error of judgment and he regrets his actions. The judge jailed Rolfe for 15 weeks due to his record, but said he'd served 25 days on a qualifying curfew. Gillingham was given a 13-week sentence, suspended for a year. His drug rehabilitation requirement was extended by 6 months and had an existing community order extended to last 18 months. Sad, isn't it?
Yes. Richard Clare, please.
The post office shuts. A post office in Winchester has announced its closure, leaving just 2 branches in the city. The post office on Upper High Street recently put a sign in the window which reads, "Following the resignation of the postmaster and the withdrawal of the premises for post office use, the above branch will be closing temporarily on Tuesday the 30th of November 2021 at 17:30. A post office spokesperson said, "We know how important a post office is to a community. We are working hard to try to restore service as soon as possible. In the interim, alternative branches include Winchester and Stony Lane." The Chronicle approached a member of staff who described herself as the manager, but she declined to comment.
Thank you, Claire. This is headed Residents Set to be Given Update on Silver Hill Plans. Residents and businesses across the Winchester district are invited to join the next Central Winchester Regeneration Open Forum to hear an update on the project. During the session on November the 22nd, attendees will hear the latest on the archaeological investigations underway, plans for the site of the old Friarsgate Medical Centre, improvements planned at King's Walk, and the next step for the redevelopment of the site and how the proposals will be delivered. Proposals for this phase of the development incorporate Winchester Bus Station, King's Walk, the old Friarsgate Medical Centre and Coitbury House to bring a vibrant new mixed-use development with high-quality new homes, flexible workspaces, a thriving nighttime economy and beautiful public spaces. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "We are at an exciting time for this project and are really keen to share our progress with the public. This open forum will be a chance for everyone to see what we have been busy doing since the last open forum in the summer, including updates on our archaeology investigations and our plans for Friarsgate and King's Walk, as well as what will happen next to make the vision for this area a reality. There will be a presentation from members of the team and everyone will have a chance to ask questions." The open forum will be held on November the 22nd at 6 p.m. and will be hosted online via Microsoft Teams. If you would like to join, email cwreagan@winchester.gov.uk to be sent a link and instructions on how to join. And Ros now has our last news item, please.
Oh, good. Right. Well, this is about the Lido estimate. So it's headed, Council explains 10 million Lido estimate. The City Council has justified its 10 to 12 million estimation for the cost of Lido in Winchester. A petition was gained around 300 signatures for the Lido on the site of the River Park Leisure Centre in Gordon Road. But the idea has been blocked after Winchester City Council unveiled plants with the plans with the University of Southampton for an expanded campus. In a public briefing last month, Councillor Kelsa Learney, Cabinet Minister for Housing and Asset Management, said that the site was on a floodplain and the Lido scheme was likely to be very expensive. She quoted that it could cost at least £10 million to develop. However, campaigners have told the Chronicle that the Lido is likely to cost in the region of £4 to £7 million. In a statement, Councillor Learney said that we have looked at the cost of building and bringing back into use Lido facilities across the country in recent years. The estimated cost of a new Lido in Abergavenny in early 2019, for example, was £7 million. Since then, building costs have risen significantly and they are predicted to continue to rise by 3 to 5% per year over the next 5 years. When you add costs associated with the River Park Leisure Centre site, £2 million to demolish the building and the complications involved in building in an area which is at a flood risk and has a high water table, the £10 million figure looks conservative. Of course, because we have not received specific information relating to the size, facilities or exact location of the Lido, that it is the subject of this petition, we're unable to comment on the group's lower figure without more information. Any difference between the cost estimate needs to take into account that we might be comparing different propositions.
Thank you, Roz. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week, but before we go, another reminder to say that if you have any problems at all with your recording, please contact Liz Legree via the telephone number on the USB pod. So thanks to all our support team for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course, many thanks to our readers. Roz?
Goodbye.
Richard?
Goodbye.
Claire?
Bye.
And from me, Peter. Until next time, goodbye. Now, please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, also putting the label inside the envelope. Thank you, and we look forward to reading for you again at some future time.